B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with pet Celtics and bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday.
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper! Final hour of the show this afternoon. I got right back to your Celtics calls because a lot of you guys came on late. Continue that conversation. And this team sucks start to the year. Five games in. They're at the Wizards tonight. If you missed that in the update, sounds like they'll be a bit undermanned as shocker Robert Williams. You know, because I think he's looked pretty good. He's been one of the silver linings so far this season. But
you can't
trust him to be out there all the time. He's questionable due to illness. It's an illness thing, but usually it's an injury thing. But Robert Williams, like, Josh Richardson, probable with back spasms. No Marcus Smart. So I don't like right now. You can't point at any game for this team and say like that would be a win because that's. The two home games, Chris, the opener last Friday against Toronto and then this last Wizards game at home, like those should be, you look at and say, win. Like, they shouldn't have lost those two games at all. Let's go to Ray in the truck on the duo of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. I hear talk about these guys, being kind of young and stuff. But look, they've been playing basketball for 15 to 20 years, somewhere in that range. A bunch of different teams they've been on, and they've seen victory and loss. And if they're not smart enough, they know what it takes to win. You got to share, right? You can't always have the spotlight. And that's the bottom line with this team and all teams. And then another thing I want to throw in is, hey, when I was playing basketball, and I didn't get beyond high school, but they talk about 50% from three-point line being good. Hell, not in my league. You can't put the ball in. If that's the shoot percentage you've got, then I ain't passing the ball to you. Hell, you got to be around 60%, 65% in backyard. Why do they make such a big thing in pros in college and all that shit?
I had a feeling that a swear might be coming. If you could get that beer up, thank you very much. Yeah.
Well. Can I just randomly pour some gasoline on the fire here just because sometimes that's what I do? I was just looking up some stats. I have to be honest. I haven't been able to follow the rest of the NBA as closely as I would like to at this point, just looking at the Celtics mostly, and I've been doing a lot of Patriots sort of beat reporting for WCVB.
Yeah.
But Sadiq Bey, who they could have drafted, is averaging 18.3 points per game. And what do you know? There's another guy who's having a pretty good season. Desmond Bane, our guy Desmond Bane, is averaging 19.2 points per game and shooting 48% from the field and 41.5, we'll call it 42, from three.
Huh. You've been pissed since day one that they didn't end up drafting him.
Yep. Bane. That guy. You don't think he couldn't help this team when they need floor spacing and shooting?
Well, look how they're not playing young players, though, Chris.
Like, I know.
Even if they did draft them, would these guys be playing? Probably not.
Well, those two guys would because the reason they fell in the draft the way they did was because they were more polished college players with sort of lower ceilings but higher floors, right? Everybody wants the empty vessel of potential, but those are the type of guys that would be able to slot in and have slotted in right away. Now the Pistons aren't a contender, but Memphis is, at least a playoff team, right? Those guys have been able to show up and play right away. But I think sometimes the Celtics tend to do a little more the swing for the fences type of deal with guys. That was sort of Danny's MO, swing for the fences, try and get a ton of talent.
Dave in Los Angeles on Jason Tatum. Hello, Dave.
Hi, thanks, guys. I just want to say that I am proud to be the second septuagenarian to call you today.
All right, Dave, I like it.
Thank you. I know everybody's bagging on Jason Tatum, but, here in L.A., Kobe has always been treated as a god, and I have always thought that he's a gunner who doesn't make his teammates better. And you touched on it. Jason would imitate Durant rather than Kobe, Durant is just so efficient. You don't see him standing out behind the three-point line just dribbling between his legs for, 18 seconds and then you know, going one-on-one and forcing up a shot. And his decision-making just isn't good a lot of the times. He makes the game more difficult for himself than he needs to be. And I just wanted to say, Jim, I thought your line yesterday about Udoka and the team treating him like a substitute teacher was a great one.
Oh, thanks,
and,
Dave.
Yeah, and I do really, I don't want to butter you up, but I really do enjoy your show. And Chris, I make sure that I never miss your 1 hour stint on Fridays on Felger and Mass.
Well,
thanks a lot, guys.
Much appreciated, thanks. And thank you for the call.
Yeah, I wish I was in L.A. too. I know,
oh,
Chris.
Me too. LA's the best. Although I think they had some bad weather out there. When it rains out there, it's like apocalyptic.
It rained for an hour.
It's like the end of days when it rains out there. The way people respond, the way they act. It's so, I mean,
now,
I've been out
true.
There when the weather's bad, and it is. They do not respond well to it.
Yeah, that's true. The last time I was out there, they got, you know, a day and a half of rain, and it was like how, you know, local stations around here treat blizzards. Like, it's like, oh,
oh
calm
God.
Down. It's just a little bit of rain,
no,
people.
I mean, it is literally like Armageddon if it rains there for a while.
Cam in Lowell on the Celtics here next year on Gaspar Mari. Hello, Cam.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having my call. So I've been thinking a lot about the Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum sort of effort issues. And I really feel like Kyrie Irving was the worst thing to happen to this team. They sort of learned to become a pro from him, and really shows. I don't want to sound too bitter, but I am very bitter.
You know, and understandably so. Like, you go back to when they got Kyrie Irving and they signed Gordon Hayward. I mean, it was being talked about, not locally, nationally, Chris. People that cover the league, you know, some of the more respected talking heads that cover the NBA. Like, this Celtics, this group, and with young players like Tatum and Brown, they're going to be winning multiple championships,
that's
plural,
true.
You know?
Yeah, right.
And how this whole thing fell apart, like, I can't blame people for being pissed off or bitter about it. Because now, you're maybe the worst position you could be, at least it feels right now with this team. The worst position you can be in the NBA, and that's like a middler, and you don't know where it's going to go and whether or not your star player cares about winning that much and whether or not he's going to want to stay here long term.
I mean, I think he cares about winning, but again, I think when push comes to shove, he cares more about the individual accomplishments, at least throughout the course of the regular season. You know, I think he gets into the postseason, he ups his game, which isn't that what we always complain about with players? Like Mads was talking about Xander Bogaerts not upping his game in the MLB postseason. Well, you know, Jason Tatum ups his game in the playoffs. I think the problem is, and I've mentioned this before with Tatum and Brown, and I mentioned it last year, they're kind of on the same accomplishment timeline,
mm-hmm.
which is an issue potentially in the NBA where the individual stuff seems to matter to guys first. They want to do that first, establish themselves, and then they're willing to sacrifice to win. And so if you had an older guy, a guy that was maybe in his late 20s, that's already sort of established himself and done all that stuff, maybe it would be a little easier. But when you have two guys who are on the same accomplishment timeline, still sort of trying to carve out their place in the NBA hierarchy, trying to put their stamp on the league, it can be challenging.
Mark is next, wants to talk about the Celtics. You're here on Gaspar Mari. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Great. First-time caller. Love the show. Just want to talk about Smart and Schroeder. Smart, I'm just getting tired of seeing the same old thing every year, shooting threes, you know, thinking he's good. I really like the addition of Schroeder. I want to get your thoughts on possibly him starting eventually. And just one more ad. Just tired of the players shooting these shots and not following up on their own shots. Guys, have a great day.
Thanks, Mark. At this point right now, I would like to see Schroeder in the starting five. But I just don't know if they would do that with Marcus Smart because, well, they've given him this extension. They treat him as like their core, one of their core three players. Would they be able to do, is he happy he got the money? Or if he did something like this, would he feel like he was double-crossed? Like, I just think that it could get worse in terms of the dynamic with Marcus Smart and the team and him being problematic and with his attitude if you'd sent him to the bench.
I agree. I think you might have to wait, you know, maybe a quarter of the way through the season. So 20 games, what are we, 5 games in? You might have to wait another 10 to 15 games. However, Udoka doesn't seem like that guy, right? He doesn't seem like that guy. That to quote Marcus Smart, I think or to sort of paraphrase him, I think Udoka is about that life and will pull Marcus Smart out of the starting lineup if the team's not winning. So, you know, I don't know how Smart responds to that. I think he might be better suited for a six-man role at this point where he can come in, do the energy thing, hopefully, and maybe he'll get more shots and more scoring opportunities. That's one of the sneaky things about this team that we've seen over the last don't know, 4 years, right? Marcus Smart sort of getting to a point, and we saw it in the playoffs when they made the run to the Eastern Conference Finals, and he was vital in that against Toronto. But that might have been one of the worst things that ever happened, because now all of a sudden he's gotten to a point where he's not content just doing the Marcus Smart things. He's kind of like defining himself as a player through his offensive game, and that is the last thing they need.
We just start Smart and Schroeder and move Al or Rob Williams to the bench.
Yeah, that might be a good, you know, that's sort of like the Missouri Compromise solution, right?
It's true.
because now Schroeder's in the starting lineup. You get more of his distribution. You're not ticking off Smart. You tell me, B-Rob, I haven't looked at the stats on NBA.com. What are the lineups that have Schroeder and Smart say? Because my gut feeling, looking at those two guys, they're both not consistent outside shooters, and I don't see them playing well together.
Yeah, your spacing is not going to, the offense has not been good with them together on the floor. And yes, so that's a problem. You're not going to have enough spacing. If you have Al at the five, maybe if he starts hitting threes, that works. But I guess the one reason why that might appeal to me is, so it's something Jim was talking about earlier, that opens the door for Nesmith, Pritchard, those guys to play off the bench. If you start Schroeder, then you got to bring in your younger guys off the bench to give them
good
some
point.
Minutes too.
Let's go to Jeff in Westboro on Jason Tatum. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hey.
Hey, guys. Tatum is the biggest problem on this team, and Smart wastes possessions all the time too. But there was a sequence the other night where Tatum goes 1-on-3, gets blocked, doesn't go back on defense. Next time, 3 contested misses. Next time, looking for a foul, doesn't get it. It's wasted possessions. And I keep going back to the bubble. There's 2 things. The block against Miami where he's got to finish that, and the other guy just wants it more.
Yeah, bam.
And there's
yeah,
a play
bam,
where,
got him.
And then there's a play in the Toronto series where Lowry and him go crashing into the boards, and, like, Lowry gets the ball. He's fired up. Tatum's complaining, oh, my shoulder. You know, it's like you got to get these possessions. It's everything in the game.
Tatum's tough in this regard in terms of, look, he's the ultimate guy where you're like, no, no, no. Oh, wow, he hit that. You know, so when he does all those things, and when he does them in a 60-point game, you're like, oh, my God, like, this guy's the next Kevin Durant. When he does them and the shots don't go in and the team's losing, then, you know, you get the calls like that, and rightfully so. And so that's the thing. It's a double-edged sword in that when he's on, he does all the same stuff and no one complains, and it's amazing because he's lighting it up. But when you're losing and those difficult shots aren't going in and you get those wasted possessions, I think those things become highlighted and the issues with playing that way on a consistent basis become exacerbated.
Biggest game of the Patriots season so far coming up tomorrow against the Chargers on the road. I don't think that that's hyperbolic to say. We'll circle back and get into this game coming up next. And along with your phone calls, too, 617-779-0985. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'd rather not, with those big giant lips of yours, Steven Tyler. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How old is he now? Do you know how old Steven Tyler is?
If I had to guess,
I'll give you some time to Google. By the way, just as we wrap up,
I'm
going to
say 66.
That's your guess?
Ahead. Yeah.
I'm going to say he's 72.
And the winner is, oh, holy crap, 73.
Wow, I was close.
Yeah.
I was close. Wow, I know how old my mom is, and my mom saw like Aerosmith before they were like Aerosmith. So
when they were actually good?
Ooh. Oh, wow. There's a shot. By the way, speaking of birthdays, we'd be remiss. We did not mention that it is Nia Long's birthday. And Nia Long, the significant other of Celtics coach Ime Udoka, also a great actress. And how old do you think she is? She looks fantastic.
47?
Pretty good guess. 51. She turns 51 today.
Wow. Well, good for her.
So Mr. Nia Long,
you'd think with her,
aka Ime Udoka, needs to deliver a win tonight.
You'd think with her being around too, maybe those guys would maybe want to, like, I don't know, keep it together, be a little bit more professional, you know, try to show off for Nia type of thing. But so far, so you know, that hasn't happened.
Nope.
I'm just trying to look at, like, I want to see whether, and now you get me thinking.
Cause
me, there's like a clear line of demarcation for when Aerosmith's music really started to turn into garbage.
Okay. And what did you think of them in the 80s? Like Dream On's a good, like that's 70s, right?
Yes. Yeah. 80s Aerosmith. I mean, they couldn't even stay on stage. That's when they were known as the Toxic Twins. Him and Joe Perry, like, were basically, you know, doing all the heroin before they got on stage and couldn't even keep it together. So they basically broke up at one point.
Okay. That's when I was, you know, a child of the 80s. I would see them all the time on MTV and the videos were good. But when I think about those actual songs, like,
oh, crazy, amazing, were, like Living on the Edge, garbage songs,
terrible songs.
Yeah.
What's the Ragdoll one?
So that's also 80s.
That's another, but that song sucked.
Oh, terrible.
But their videos were great, and they would get a lot of play on MTV because they had great videos, but the actual songs were terrible.
Yeah, because they had, in Amazing and Crazy, they had What's-Her-Face. Well, they had
Alicia
his daughter.
Alicia Silverstone, his daughter Liv, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's why they had such a comeback, because those videos were amazing.
Those videos were
amazing. And for a young teen who was always in front of the television... Boy, those did the job for a time. I'll put it to you that way. When things were hard to come by, and you know, you're home, you're skipping school.
This is pre-internet.
Yeah, I mean, look, those were fantastic videos. But yeah, around the Pump, 89's Pump.
No.
Permanent Vacation, 87. Looks like, yeah, I mean, that's when they really started to be garbage. Like, oh, just one of the most overrated bands in history. Ugh. Anyway, okay, I digress. The Patriots tomorrow against the LA Chargers, for those that missed the first hour, I don't think we can overemphasize how huge this game is for the Patriots, because I think it gets them into real path conversation. And people will, you know, that are looking at them right now is like, peh, not a playoff team. Eh, some of the money they spent this offseason wasn't worth it for someone like Jonnu Smith or Jalen Mills, and nah, I don't really believe in them. They win this game tomorrow. Not only would it be, Chris, like looking at it, it would be their first like real road win in like 2 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. You hit me with that stat earlier, and I couldn't believe that.
But I think it would get a lot of people around here more excited about the team and have them believing in them again in terms of what they could be in terms of contending this year.
I agree. And also, I think it would set them up for a nice stretch. I mean, obviously, you know, you beat the Jets. If you beat the Chargers, that's two in a row. Then you go to Carolina. They're a little bit of a mess now with Sam Darnold falling off. And then you have the Browns, and Baker Mayfield's dealing with that shoulder injury. And that team, I think, is sort of a little bit of a ticking time bomb, because they have a lot of really talented players and guys who've achieved things individually, but it's not like they're really coalescing that well. So you could have a nice little four-game winning streak for yourself going into the Thursday night game against the Falcons. I mean, they could really get on a run here, like really get on a roll if they can win this game tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, this next game, I mean, that Carolina team, they've come back down to earth. Boy, does Sam Darnold stink. And then after that, it is, I mean, this Cleveland Browns team, I don't know if it's even the right move going back to Baker Mayfield this week with the torn labrum and the non-throwing shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Like, you look at that schedule, it doesn't look as daunting as it did maybe 3-4 weeks ago. Let's go to Jason in the car, who has a thought on Mac Jones. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys. Great show. Two quick thoughts on, first, I would say the 2019 Pats, them winning the Super Bowl, beating the Rams that Super Bowl. I mean, how many teams lose the Super Bowl the year before and come back and win? And we just see what it does for most teams after a loss like that. So I don't think that gets enough credit. But the other thing is, on Mac Jones, I know Gasper's made comparisons, but why couldn't he be potentially, and not saying he'll ever get there, but in the style of a Drew Brees with the accuracy, drop back, shorter kind of quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, is it possible? Yeah, absolutely. And I think I went back the other night and actually read some of the pre-draft things, and the people that were really high on him, like a Chris Sims, they actually would evoke the name of Drew Brees. So do I think he'll reach that level? I don't. But the one thing that's interesting about Brees is, remember, it took Brees a while to sort of get the acclaim and appreciation. It wasn't like right away he got put in that Brady, Rodgers category, Manning. It took him a while to get to that.
He sneaky sucked with the Chargers for a few of those years.
Yeah, I mean, well, they replaced him with Phillip Rivers.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then he got hurt. So, yeah, maybe that's a possibility. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen because I think Drew Brees maybe didn't get the credit he deserved as a quarterback. I mean, he was extremely accurate, which obviously Mac is as well, but he was very good at sort of knowing where to go with the football. But look, it's always a possibility. And you know what? I appreciate that call, and I appreciate him mentioning Drew Brees and saying, why can't Mac Jones be this? Because most of what I get is just blind saying it's only 5 games, it's only 6 games, it's only 7 games. Why do we have to put a ceiling on it? Why do we have to do this? Except for when somebody says, like, oh, he's a franchise quarterback, they're like, yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Nobody says, like, oh, it's only 7 games. Look, you disagree with me, that's totally cool. I could be wrong. This is Sports Talk Radio. It's what we do. We do player projections. Don't we project, like, what will Charlie McAvoy be? We just spent an hour talking about the Celtics. Who is Jason Tatum going to be? Is he going to be Carmelo Anthony or Kevin Durant? We do it for almost every player, but for some reason, we're not allowed to do it for Mac Jones. For whatever reason, we're not allowed to do it, unless you think he's going to be Brady, which basically nobody has the stones to say.
Oh, no, the people say it, though, in terms of, like, young Brady. Like, well, look at the trend, yeah, and Brady's numbers compared to Mac Jones through the first 7 games. What Brady did in 01, like, that, I'm sorry, like, I tune you out. Like, don't bring Brady's name up when you're talking about Mac Jones. The brain powers down. The little Obi-Wan Kenobi in my brain just, boo, there. I've stopped listening to you.
But I appreciate someone who's willing to put their name to that. Like, that was great. He said, yeah, I think Drew Brees. I appreciate that. You know, at least put, if you disagree with me, that's fine. But at least put a name to it instead of just sort of doing the, oh, you're wrong. Like, why are you selling him short? And it's like, you know, it's the whole, like, I'm not saying he's going to be Tom Brady, but I'm not saying he's going to be Tom Brady. That's what drives me crazy.
So I said earlier, so also at the risk of contradicting myself, I have said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, like, all right, now I'm with Felger on this, like, turn the offense over to Mac Jones, like, let this kid throw down the field more, let's see more Kendrick Bourne. And you're seeing that. The offense has been, I think, trending upwards the last couple of weeks. Offensive line, more continuity there. They only gave up one sack last week, so that's trending upwards. But tomorrow, I think if they're going to win, I'm falling in line with everybody else and say attack the L.A. Chargers with your ground game. They're porous against the run, one of the worst teams, if not the worst team statistically in the league against the run.
Statistically, they are the worst.
Yeah, so, like, you know, muck this game up, have a boring game, use a little bit of play action, but just ground and pound, that's how you're going to win. If they end up in a shootout with the Chargers tomorrow and they lose this game, keep this in mind. I mentioned this in the headlines a couple of times now. The Panthers have activated Stephon Gilmore off the PUP list. He is going to play against the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow. In other words, he would have been available against the Chargers tomorrow. And if he had a good game and shut down Keenan Allen like he did last year when the Patriots went out there and shut out the Chargers, you know, the Patriots still could have traded him before Tuesday if they wanted to. I don't like how this thing was handled. I don't like what the return was. It was basically nothing, like a sixth rounder in, what, 2023? Like, you've got pocket lint for Stephon Gilmore. Your weakness right now is your defense, specifically your secondary.
Yeah, Jonathan Jones on IR.
Right. You have Jonathan Jones on IR. Now, this will be, I think, a clear second guess, and rightfully so. They get into a shootout, which I don't think you want to do with Justin Herbert and some of these weapons that he has there. With this team tomorrow, you lose. Again, Gilmore is playing tomorrow. So help me God, if he makes like an impact play against Matt Ryan and that Falcons offense, and you lose, you're getting shredded in your secondary. Like, you can't tell me, even if you did want to trade him, that he couldn't have helped you for at least this game. And this game is huge.
You're never going to let this go, are you?
No, because I think the return sucks. And how this whole thing was handled, because if you wanted to move on from Gilmore, you knew it was untenable, then you should have got rid of him before 2020, which was basically a throwaway year. And that's how Belichick treated it.
Do you think any element of Brady not being there? And you have to remember where they were, too. Like, so Brady was gone, obviously, and so you needed the team to be as good as possible. But I honestly think that last year they were chastened a little bit. I think they went into that year thinking, like, okay, we have another quarter, you know, whether it's Stidham or Newton, you know, we'll plug in another quarterback, and, like, yeah, we're not going to be as good as we were with Tom, but, you know, we'll win 10 games. We'll go 10-6 and make the playoffs. Like, I think they were full Felger. Like, yeah, if we have to play Hoyer, we'll win 10 games. Do you think that factored into the decision at all, them believing that and then having to be disabused of that notion?
No, because, again, remember, like, Bill was bitching to SiriusXM NFL Radio, like, halfway through the season last year about salary cap implications.
Yeah.
And that's why we're in the situation we're in.
Like, that's because he quickly realized, like, it was a no-go and had to come up with a reason why. But I'm just saying, before that season started, like, that offseason, do you think that they still thought at that point, like, yeah, just plug in the quarterback, we'll go 10-6, and if we have the talent around it, we're good to go?
No, not with Cam Newton. I think he crossed his fingers and hoped for the best, and he, you know, and I get this, like, you know, it was going to be such an unknown with COVID, would we even get through the entire season? No, he treated it like a throwaway year. So, again, that's why you should have utilized the asset a little bit better and traded Stephon Gilmore ahead of 2020. But now, again, so keep an eye on that tomorrow. He's going to play. He's going to play, and you get shredded in the secondary. You get into a shootout with the Chargers. You still could have used him. He would have been available, and you still could have traded him by Tuesday.
And that also means, I mean, unless he gets hurt, he's probably going to play against you, so that should be interesting next week.
Yeah. Oh, and I hope he gets a couple of picks in that game. What? 617-779-0985. The phone number. We got another segment to go here before we get to five questions for Chris Gass. We've got nothing to do with sports. You want to join us? 617-779-0985. Chris actually wanted to touch on something World Series related, too. We'll get to that next here on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. All right, Chris, you wanted to touch on something regarding the World Series, which I admittedly have watched, because they're, what now, three games into this thing? I think I've watched three innings total.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. I mean, those first two games were interminable from everything that I've read about them. And anytime I checked in for like a half second, I'm like, oh, God, like, all right, enough.
You know the average time a game in the postseason, Buster only had this.
It was like 4:10.
It's, No, it's not that high. It's like 3 hours and 40 minutes.
Well, let's round off. Let's call it four. That's horrific. It is, Chris. Like, we grew up, you know, back in my day, like, old man shakes his fist at the cloud. I don't care. I'm right. He's right. We're old. These games used to be 2.5 hours, 250 tops. Like, they used to be, and it used to be a great product. Now it basically stinks. But it wasn't so much about the play on the field or anything with these first three games. There was something that caught your eye from the old Atlanta Journal-Constitution regarding this World Series. What is that?
Yeah, you know, it's been a pretty big deal down in Atlanta. That team's had a great run, and so you know how Atlanta can be as a sports town overall, but also when they have a team that's, you know, hot and on the verge of choking, I mean, winning a championship. And so this caught my eye, just knowing sort of as an African-American what Atlanta means to the African-American community. It's kind of like the Mecca, you know. It's sort of like the big joke down there is – not a big joke, but the idea is like when the Black Panther movies came out, it's like, yeah, Wakanda exists. It's Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I saw this stat in this story. So this year, 7% of Major League Baseball rosters on opening day were comprised of African-American players. So the number of African-American players on opening day rosters this year was 7%. That is down from a high of 18.7% in 1981. And what really struck me in this Atlanta Journal-Constitution story, and I think it would strike you too, having lived down there, Jim, the Atlanta Braves, I mean, this is the team of, like, you know, obviously Hank Aaron, and when I was a kid growing up, you know, Ron Gant, Marquise Grissom. They have one African-American player, and it's Terrence Gore, who's basically a designated pinch runner and was added to the postseason roster for that purpose. That's it. And that to me is just really shocking when I think about it. And I think about a baseball team, you know, representing a community. You want to talk about what a baseball team can mean to a community. A lot of people go back to 1968, the Detroit Tigers, all the strife that was going on in Detroit with riots and all that stuff. But it unified the city, the Tigers going on to win the World Series. And it's just shocking to me to see not only that number's that low at 7%, because that's been going on for a while now, but to think of the Atlanta Braves representing that city with one African-American player who basically is only there to be a pinch runner. I find that problematic for baseball.
Yeah, but are you, I'm surprised that you're surprised, because especially after the, I mean, what I think, I'm not alone in thinking this, what was like their white flight out of the city proper.
A lot of people got mad about that, yeah.
To move their...
Cobb County.
To go to Cobb County, which in the time living there, like, you're right. Like, it's, yeah, Wakanda is, you know, that's the equivalent of Atlanta. Like, I remember when I first started working down there, former Timberwolves head coach Sam Mitchell, who worked at the sports radio station I was at, I think he does stuff for TSN Canada or so whatever now. But he's like, man, this is a chocolate city. Like, he's like,
yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And so, and... Yep, like, if the Braves were still in Atlanta proper, yep, problematic. Like, that's, you're not catering to your audience in terms of, you know, like, if you want to reach an African-American audience, I understand where you're coming from. But after that move to, like, let's go and deal with, like, to Cobb County, because most of our audience is whites from the burbs, I'm not that surprised at it. Really? I get it, and I understand what you mean in terms of it being problematic, but how they've run that operation, like, I'm not surprised. I'm not like I I'm going on close to 10 years since I was living there. And I don't know how much the black community really cared about the Braves all that much down there.
Really?
The time that I was there.
That's interesting then. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, people are in it for the Hawks. Certainly. I mean, it's UGA, precipitous drop off, Falcons, Hawks, baseball. It was like, and I tell you, like, even granted, I was working late night, so it's not like I was taking a ton of calls, but most of the calls, it was like, heard the bird of dirt, like old, like, you know, old crusty white dudes that love baseball. Like, that's really what it was. So I don't know. Like, I'm not that surprised.
It's just for me, the other part of it for me is, again, growing up, I know you did too. You know, the Braves, this was some genius marketing, but they billed themselves as America's team, and they were on TBS, and they were on throughout the country, and they're still on everywhere throughout the South. And again, maybe Atlanta proper, maybe there's not as many people interested in the Braves, African-American people interested in the Braves, but you know, I feel like throughout the South, like, that's kind of the team. And I know there's people who are interested in the team. So it's just, to me, it's sort of symbolic of a bigger issue, yet another bigger issue that Major League Baseball is dealing with demographically. I mean, I think that when you have a city like Atlanta, which is such a great source of pride in the black community, and that team is doing what they're doing, and you only have one African-American player on the team, I think that's a challenge for your sport as a whole, to engage a younger generation and to engage young African-American fans and athletes, because I know, you know, they're trying to boost African-American participation in baseball again. And to me, that's just so glaring to look at the Atlanta Braves and think that they have one guy and he barely plays, and he's a you know, basically designated, you know, pinch runner.
Have you paid attention to the series much? Do you are you pulling for the Braves, or are you do you like the black hat?
You know, it's
Houston Astros, like, playing the role of the bad guy.
I'm torn. The Braves are a better story, and I'm a big Ronald Acuna guy. I know he's obviously not playing; he's out for the year. But the Braves are a better story. On the other hand, while I don't love the Astros, I do sort of look at it and say, "Man, five straight ALCS is pretty impressive." And I feel like they don't really get their respect. And I think if they win another World Series and it's not in the year they were banging on trash cans, then people will have to give them their respect. So honestly, I'm probably pulling for Houston, just because I feel like everybody's just being like, cheater, cheater, they're not that good. And it's like, no, actually, like, what they've done the last 5 years is really impressive, to go to five straight championship series. And if they win another World Series, I think it sort of validates them in a different way. So I'm actually rooting for Houston. I'll tell you what I'm not rooting for is pitchers being pulled out of no-hitters in the World Series again.
When that happened last night. Right. Yeah,
76
God forbid,
pitches for Ian Anderson.
God forbid he goes third time through. But ultimately, it was the right thing.
I mean, it worked, right?
Yeah.
But it's not great from an entertainment standpoint.
No, it is a tough product to watch. And it feels like, you know, labor strife is on the horizon. And what do you make for that for the Red Sox, who feel like, you know, they got this bump with this postseason run? Feels like they got a lot of their, you know, their brand mojo back. I think that would kill that. Like, for those that were teetering or hadn't paid attention or wanted to see what this team, you know, like, they got involved again because of this pretty deep playoff run that they went on that I thought was unexpected. They're gonna push all those people away if there's anything like that. If there's a strike, they're screwed.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I know the ratings have been up overall. I would like to see. I'm not good with the ratings stuff. I keep seeing these numbers. Ratings are up this percentage over last year. And I'm like, but that was the COVID year. Like, tell me how much the ratings are up over 19, you know? But it seems like...
Oh, it's all fudged, yeah.
Oh, is it really?
No, I think, like, how they try to pose that. Like, our ratings are up. But, yeah, like, they leave out conveniently, like, again, you're comparing it to, you know, COVID.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just sort of look at it with baseball. They've made some strides, obviously, and you want to be able to build on that momentum. But I really think they're headed for like a sort of a nuclear winter here. It just, Tony Clark needs a win. The owners have basically taken over the game. They've dominated at the negotiating table. Basically, the owners have been like the 27 Yankees at the negotiating table. The last CBA was catastrophic for the players. The way the game is trending from an analytics standpoint, it basically is devaluing pretty much every player. I mean, except for the slugger. But even the slugger, like I'm talking to Felger, and he was like, oh, you know, this guy, what, Hunter Renfro. He was trying to make the case that the Red Sox had more talent than the Astros. It's like Hunter Renfro hit 30 home runs. I was like, lots of guys hit 30 home runs. There was one year, I think Chris Davis led the league in home runs and got DFA'd.
Travis Shaw, the Orioles, yeah.
Yeah, Travis Shaw had 230 home run seasons and got DFA'd. So I just think everything's been devalued now. It's all about a bunch of integers and just plugging those in.
They've ruined the sport. They really have. I mean, I used to, in my day, like, you know, like I would tune into the World Series, even if it had nothing to do with the a team that I'd be involved with or like want the Reds. You know, they certainly never really went when I was a kid other than 86. But the Red Sox going to the World Series, like even if they weren't there, like I paid attention. You know, like 89 when it's the A's and Giants and the earthquake happens, like all that stuff. It was entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Now, like, I tried the other night. I was like, I'd rather watch Succession. I got to get caught up with this. Like, I can't do this.
I'll tell you this. 89 was probably the peak of my baseball fandom. And this is no exaggeration. I was so into Kevin Mitchell, and I thought he was going to chase down then Roger Maris's home run record, that every night before I went to bed, you know, little Chris would say his prayers and then recount Kevin Mitchell's batting average, home runs, and RBIs.
No
every
kidding?
Night, I swear, yes. This is what I did. Every night, I'd say my prayers, and then I would recount Kevin Mitchell's batting average, home runs, and RBIs. Because that was the peak of my baseball fan. Baseball mattered to me so much in 1989. It's crazy.
And just to reset, for those that might not have heard that earlier or didn't want to bother to catch up on the podcast later today, and shame on you if that's you. You think win or lose for the Patriots tomorrow, they should still be involved with the trade deadline. Why?
Because I think it gives you an opportunity to continue to build the team, to retool. If it's something with cornerback, that's going to be an issue for you moving on the rest of this season and into next year. And I think Mac Jones and some of the other young guys in this team can grow if you remain a competitive team and an improving team throughout the year, even if you're not a championship contender, and even if it turns out that you're short of being a playoff team. So I think you're trying to build something here, and you keep building, and you don't want to peel pieces off and wave the white flag.
All right. Well, with that, let us get to five questions for Mr. Chris Casper. Have nothing to do with sports, shall we?
I got five questions for Chris Casper of Channel 5. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Chrissy, question number one. Do you have a strong opinion about something that's completely insignificant? In other words, how the toilet paper comes off
yes.
the roll.
Oh, my God. You just nailed it. Yes. It's so funny you said that's what I was going to say. There was only one correct way to put the toilet paper on the roll, and it is overhand. It is not underhand.
Yeah, over the roll.
Over
the roll,
so that when you pull it,
it comes
down.
Down.
You don't
want
to have to pull up.
Yeah,
yes, correct.
Right. Yeah,
that's the only way to do it.
The only people that like do that, you've done it by mistake. If you go under the roll, like no one wants under the roll.
No,
it's
under's
over
a pain.
The roll.
It's over because that's the whole idea. You can see where the paper is perforated, and when something's perforated like that, you're supposed to pull down to break it off. It's obvious.
Yeah. I mean, my whole life is me having strong opinions about completely insignificant things. I saw someone the other night that had socks with sandals on, like, and that you left the house wearing socks and sandals. Like, you should be sent back home. Put on proper shoes. Like, what
really?
The hell are you doing? Socks with sandals. Who let you leave the house like that? You have no one in your life that actually cares about you. I mean, countless things.
Can I give you another one for
yes,
me?
Please.
People that leave a room that they know they're not going to be in for a while and leave the light on. That drives me insane.
Yeah.
Don't walk out of the room and leave, like, the light on when you know you're leaving. Like, sir, for example, if you're using a bathroom and you leave said bathroom and you just leave the light on in the bathroom and you don't plan to return anytime soon or, like, until you have to go to the bathroom again, not a fan of that.
Sounds like a passive-aggressive shot at your wife is what that
what?
Is.
What? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Question number two, Chris. Have you ever had to call 911?
I think I did once. Yes, I did once. I witnessed an accident and it looked pretty bad and I pulled over and called 911 just as a good Samaritan. But I don't think I've... Oh, actually, nope, that's wrong. I had to call 911 for an accident that I was in when I was right out of college. An accident that was actually pretty bad, and I was very fortunate. And for those who know, like Route 1 heading towards Chelsea, that curve, I spun out, car flipped the wrong way, like basically so the front end was facing where the back end should have been facing, went across three lanes of traffic, tried to correct it, and then I went all the way back across the three lanes and slammed into the guardrail. And my favorite part of that story is, one, I didn't die, because if any car had been coming
either time,
I would have been done. But this guy in a big pickup truck saw me after my car finally stopped and mouthed, "Are you okay?" as he kept going at 60 miles an hour.
I've done it as like quote unquote good Samaritan.
Yeah.
A couple of times. I used to live in this building on the corner of 1A and Eastern Ave in Lynn.
Okay.
And yeah. You know, it's a big white house. It's like a big white, like, 3-4 family.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when I went to go look at the apartment at the time, it was advertised as in Swampscott, because I was definitely an uppity and was like, I don't want to live in Lynn.
Yeah.
And so I went and checked it out. I'm like, I could look out the window and I could see the Welcome to Swampscott sign literally staring at me, like as teasing me, like, no, you still live in Lynn. Anyway, that corner, Chris, there was more accidents
bad accidents
at that corner. So, yeah, a couple of times I ended up having to open my window. I'm like, you know, people bloodied getting out of their car days. I'm like, I got 911. Hold on. Like 2 or 3 times.
That's bad. Can I just tell a quick story about it? So when I was a kid growing up, they used to have this channel like on cable. It's just like a nothing channel. And it was just real estate listings. And we used to laugh. You know, I'm from Lynn, proud to be from Lynn. Every listing, they wouldn't say it was in Lynn. It would be like, near Swampscott, near the Saugus line.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they wouldn't list where it actually was. It's like, where's this beautiful home? Near the Saugus line. That's what they used to do. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, I remember that landlord, too. Because the place was nice. And I was like, hey, man, you advertise this as Swampscott. He's like, well, no, it's near Swampscott. Like you're
exactly.
saying. Like, the sign's right there. I'm like, oh, I don't want to tell people I live in Lynn. But I did for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Question number 3, karaoke, yay or nay?
Nay.
Do you like watching it, though? Like, have you got a few in you? Or?
Not really. No, I'm not a big karaoke person. I mean, maybe at home on one of like the Wii or something you do the karaoke. But no, I would never go to like a karaoke bar.
I am a big yay. I am a ham for karaoke.
Are you really?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
The only time I like karaoke is obviously when our friend Beetle, you know, does his big fundraiser. That was a lot of fun. That was really good. And some very good performances there.
Question number 4. How many pillows do you sleep with at night?
2, but really only 1. After another car accident I was in, actually some years ago, leaving Felger and Maz, I had some neck and eye problems. And so I have this like special pillow that I sleep with to help reduce that stuff.
Give me the name of that, because now I may as well go over about $1,000 in pillows I've spent on pillows in the last 2 years. Curious, I'm in constant neck pain. I don't sleep well.
Geez.
No pillow works. Everyone I buy after a night, I'm like, well, this blows. It could be 1, could be 3, 4. I try to put them between my legs.
Really?
Getting old stinks. My body is failing me.
Yeah,
it's
this one's it's like square and it has like it's sort of like cylindrical on the top and the bottom. And it's like smaller on the bottom.
Mm.
It's like contoured. I think they call it like a contour pillow because it's supposed to support your neck. It's made a big difference for me.
Final question for this week, Chris. Is there anything that you wish would come back into fashion?
Ooh, that's a good question. Anything that would come back into fashion. Oh, man, that's a tough one. I don't know if I really feel this way, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. You know what? I enjoyed the Skids era.
Oh, very flammable. Someone threw a match at me once when I was wearing those, and they went up like kindling.
No.
Yeah,
really happen?
I had to stop, drop, and roll. I'm not even kidding.
Are you serious?
Yeah, just like, you know, dumb teens doing bits. It was in front of the Melrose Library. I'll never forget this. Someone threw a match at me, and they went up like, and everyone was like, ah! And I tell them, stop, drop, and roll. It's a good thing I remember that in my head. Yeah. Like, and then I walked home basically in my underwear.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know Skids were that flammable.
Yeah, it turns out they were. But yeah, shout out Skids, those overpriced, very comfortable pants from like 1988. Yeah. All right. So concludes 5 questions for Chris Gasper. Pal, always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Okay. For Brian Robb of Mass Live, check out his coverage, Celtics coverage, masslive.com. That will do it for us. I'll talk to you Monday with Felger and Mass. Bye.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.